Hello, Poperincinis.
You know, the feedback so far is that people really like Heidely Ho Poperinos.
I hate it. I hate it. I will not accept that as your name.
No, I think Poperincinis is definitely setting in. But I'm telling you, I mean, both Ari and Peter have let us know that Poperinos is the way to go.
To be fair, Poperincini. I mean, a pepperoncini is an Italian.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to give it to you because otherwise you're just going to hate it and be mad. And I know that one of the reasons you don't like it is it's too close to what another podcast calls their people. So, I mean, unless you guys really put up a fuss about it, we're probably going to call you Poperincinis because we're weird like that. So...
We just don't want to be associated with those people.
Those people who do no actual fact-checking of anything. Ooh, did I say that? All right, so you are Fry and I am Bree, and we are ranking the anti-pope from Hippolytus to Felix V.
Mm-hmm. We are doing that thing.
We are doing that thing, and this is Antipope Dioscorus, the duly elected pope and rival of Pope Boniface II, so, you know, the anti-pope who is not an anti-pope.
I hope he died, like, a score after, like, election, like, an amount. Dioscorus.
All right, it took me a little too long to realize where the hell you were going with that. I mean, a score is 14 days, is it not? Google.
Google.
How long is a score?
I didn't know if it was 20.
Oh, it's 20. 20. So, 20 years, though. So, he definitely did not die.
It doesn't have to be 20 years. It could be, like, 20 days. A number of 20 days. I don't know. 20 months.
Let's say, then, he did die, pretty much, a score from his election. So, all of that came full circle and paid off, kind of.
Oh my god, I'm so sorry. Apologies.
Dioscorus, Dioscor. Somebody write something. Make it clever. We'd love it. So, we can jump right into that. For once, we have a lot more on the early life than we do on the anti-papacy, and more early life than we had to talk about with the Pope, so... Before Dioscorus was an anti-pope, he was a deacon of the Alexandrian church by the year 506, and is therefore occasionally known as Dioscorus of Alexandria. Does that sound familiar?
Oh god, probably.
Yeah. We've dealt with another Dioscorus of Alexandria, who was Dioscorus the Bishop of Alexandria, who presided over the robber synod in 449 and ended up excommunicated in the Council of Chalcedon. So that Dioscorus had been a supporter of Eutyches and Monophysitism, whereas this Dioscorus, the deacon of Alexandria that we're talking about, was a staunch anti-Monophysite. So this is Dioscorus, not that Dioscorus. But being a staunch anti-Monophysite is what gets him into trouble. See, 506 was right in the middle of the Acacian Schism, and Rome's major schism between Pope Symmachus and Laurentius, where the city also tore itself apart along the factions of pro- and anti-Byzantine. Now, in the east, Monophysitism was now the dominant religious stronghold, and the Emperor Anastasius was actively persecuting any cleric who refused to adhere to the Henoticon. And Dioscorus is one of these who refused. And so either he was forcibly exiled from Alexandria, or he fled before more serious persecution could be leveled against him. So either way, in 506, the exiled deacon Dioscorus fled straight to Rome, where he was accepted into the Orthodox Roman clergy, where he quickly began to rise through the ranks and gain significant influence. Influence that he then used to be an exceptionally useful ally to Symmachus. Now, Dioscorus was making his mark in Rome in the middle of the crisis that erupted after the Palmyre Synod, which had decreed that no council could be adequate enough to hear charges against the Pope, since the Pope was the successor of Peter. And then, we know, Theoderic had refused to accept that decision and allowed for Laurentius to vie for control of the city, and violence was at its utmost peak. But since he had earned such an influential reputation at the time, Symmachus sent Dioscorus to Ravenna to serve as a legate to King Theoderic. And we know from Symmachus's episode, and Laurentius's antipope episode, that he was one of the legates who finally managed to actually diplomatically intercede with Theoderic and convince him through his personal physician, remember Helpidius?
Mm-hmm.
To make a formal declaration in favor of Symmachus as the legitimately elected pope and put an end to the Laurentian schism once and for all. With that done, Dioscorus was then able to return to Rome with an even greater reputation than he'd had before, having been part of a, you know, actually finally securing the stable papacy. And this reputation maintained Dioscorus a prominent position within the church after the death of Symmachus, and during the papacy of Hormisdas, because Hormisdas also chose to utilize him as an important papal legate. So he sends Dioscorus as part of the embassy that went to Constantinople to meet with the new emperor Justin I, and conduct the final negotiations that would bring an end to the Acacian Schism. So he was also present at the solemn ceremony on March 28th of 519, where the formula of Hormisdas, or Harmistus.
Harmistus.
The formula of Harmistus. So he was there at the ceremony where the formula of Harmistus was signed, and the Acacian Schism was formally ended. He's also said to have played a role in convincing the Pope to reject the Theopasite formula that the monks had approached the legates with and then had gone on to Rome with. And we covered that in Hormisdas' episode, and it's not very significant to this, so. What we need to take away from this is Dioscorus is a man who has an ability to see things done. He has now been a part of ending two schisms. And side note on this whole situation as well, on this embassy to Constantinople, there are some reports that Hormisdas had sent a letter along for Emperor Justin in an attempt to persuade him to appoint the Dioscorus we're talking about now as the new Orthodox Bishop of Alexandria. So, this didn't happen because John of Cappadocia had already been consecrated to the bishopric, and he was an Orthodox man. But what this tells us is that Pope Hormisdas had a lot of faith in Dioscorus. He's like, here, why don't you make this man a fantastic bishop of one of the greatest patriarchates in the church. We don't know if this is a plan that Dioscorus had any personal knowledge of, but we do know that a great deal of reconciliation also happened for him personally with the Eastern churches, because when he came back to Rome, he was now an ardent pro-Byzantine supporter, if not the most prominent pro-Byzantine supporter during the papacy of Felix IV. So he was definitely in the faction that was not pleased about how Felix had become pope, you know, being appointed by King Theoderic, pressuring the clerics into a specific vote when he voluntold them who the next pope would be. And he definitely would have been one of the majority clergy that would have heavily resented Felix's future efforts to try and appoint his own successor to maintain a pro-Ostrogothic papacy. And then when Felix died, even though he had burned his declaration of appointment, the Ostrogothic royals and some clergy still elevated and consecrated Felix's chosen successor, Boniface II. However, as we saw, the landslide majority of bishops, like 60 out of 70, that's 85%, rejected Boniface as the next pope and turned to elect Dioscorus instead. The two men were both consecrated on the same day, which was September 22nd of 530, Boniface being elected in the Basilica of Julius, which is part of the Lateran Palace, and Dioscorus being elected in the main Lateran Palace. And as Ridley so bell tolled with that bark, so begins the seventh anti-papacy of the church.
Do, do, do.
So, following the election, the emperor in the east, who is now Emperor Justinian, oh yes, remember him. We are going to come back to him so much in future episodes. He formally recognizes Dioscorus as legitimate pope, as did all of the eastern churches. But the Ostrogothic leaders in Rome, with actual control of the city, chose to recognize Boniface. But this time, no one was quick to go to violence and rioting. They're a little bit concerned. They know how this went. And frankly, the election for Dioscorus had been overwhelming. He was, in all intents and purposes, supposed to be the legitimate pope. He had all of the backing. So maybe things would sort themselves out quickly. Unfortunately for Dioscorus, his rising star as the legitimately elected pope is cut extremely short when 22 days after his election, yes, that's a score and two, he could probably not get any closer.
Yeah.
On October 14th of 530, he dies, quickly and unexpectedly from unknown causes. Now, I didn't see anyone suggesting in the sources that there was an element of foul play associated with his death.
Like he was murdered? Straight up murdered?
Yeah, I mean, this is a time in the world where sudden illnesses suddenly gripping a person and carrying them off to death is not uncommon. But for just a second I went, I wonder if anybody's explored this as a murder, because he just dies. Like, 22 days after, he just kicks the bucket, and that's it. With no explanation of why. It's an interesting thought. Either way, the anti-papacy ended with his death, and the supporters of Dioscorus chose to reconcile with Boniface and just accept him as pope. And for the record, it is only because he died so quickly after the schism started that the clergy decide to hedge their bets rather than going back to election, that this is the only reason that Dioscorus is considered an anti-pope at all. He should, in all rights and purposes, just be known as one of the shortest papacies in history. But he's not, and he also would not be the shortest papacy in history, so we'll get there in time. So we don't know where Dioscorus ended up buried, and even though he gets a segment in Wendy Reardon's book on the deaths and burial locations, she doesn't have anything to add here, so sad face. Now, after Dioscorus' death, Boniface II made a valiant effort at legitimizing his papacy with the clergy, who had overwhelmingly not wanted him to be their pope. And as we discussed in his episode, one of the first things he does in the first synod of his papacy, besides having the Dioscoran supporters sign a retraction of their support and a pledge of allegiance to him as the new pope, was to issue an anathema on Dioscorus' memory. It's kind of unfortunate. The clergy at Rome did sign assent to this decree at the time, but it was one of those things that maintained a low burning tension and resentment in Boniface's papacy. However, we do know that this anathema does get undone. But the accounts of exactly how it was undone is unclear, because we have two accounts, and both of them, despite being contradictory to one another, are both in the Liber Pontificalis. So, you know, if you ever wanted to have a perfect example of why the Liber Pontificalis is not a very reliable source, it tells us two entirely different things here. So either Boniface burned the anathema of Dioscorus when he burned his constitution on the pope having the right to appoint their own successors, or a future pope, Pope Aegyptus, burned the anathema as one of his first acts as pope. Whoever did it, the final result of the whole situation is that the condemnation is undone, and Dioscorus' memory was restored and rehabilitated with honor to the church. And it continues to be consistently rehabilitated, with more and more modern historians looking at the legitimacy of his papacy. Like us. Ha ha. And on that note, we'll leave with the small tidbit that in the 2001 version of the Annuario Pontifico, which is that pontifical yearbook that comes out every year, A brief mention was made of Dioscorus's anti-papacy, and it read, "Perhaps the legitimacy of Dioscorus can be sustained." So, perhaps in the future, if there is a re-evaluation of the papal succession, Dioscorus may one day be considered a real pope. So that's kind of cool. And that's his life. So now, we need to rate him.
All right.
Yeah, this one's gonna be a little bit different to do.
Papam Eustificum.
So, his reasons and justifications for the schism and for setting himself up as anti-pope, which he didn't really do. The previous pope had been the choice of the king rather than the church. The clergy doesn't want that again. The previous pope attempted to appoint his successor rather than have a proper election. The clergy doesn't want that again. The appointed successor had a very close relationship with Ostrogothic rulers, which had the church in fear of their interference. And most importantly, he is the majorly elected candidate. 60 out of 70 bishops wanted him and not Boniface. So if there is a reason to sustain an election, Dioscorus has got to get a 10.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this is a perfect 10 because he's not really an anti-pope. He was legitimately elected. What better reason could you have? So he's getting a 10.
He definitely, yeah. 10.
10. So he gets a 20 in this category.
Boniface would have been the anti-pope if...
if he had lived any longer.
Yeah. Ecclesius Impetus.
This is where he comparatively won't do well because he's not much of an obstacle in the grand scheme of things. He didn't really obstruct anything. He was doing the right thing. But he did bring the church together by dying. So that's kind of the opposite of an obstacle. The only thing that we can say here in terms of obstacle is that Boniface passed an anathema against him, but due to the righteous unpopularity and resentment of this, and Boniface's own attempt to appoint a successor, he had to burn that anathema decree, so he still had a little bit of sway after his death, because people are like, nah, man, you can't do that. He was totally right. You could give him a point or two for that, I think.
Yeah, I'd probably like 2.
Okay, you'll give him a 2, I'll give him a 2. He'll get a nice round 4 for that category.
Facium scleratus.
So unfortunately in facium scleratus, he's got to get a 0 because if you search for anything to do with Dioscorus of Alexandria, even if you preface it with anti-popes and all of the right terms, all you're going to get is the guy from the Robber Synod.
Okay.
There's just no images of him, which is unfortunate.
Tempus non pontificus.
He gets a score. September 22nd to October 14th of 530 is 22 days, which is a score of 0.0625 when we put it through our calculator. I hate it. It is such an uneven, unrounded number for our spreadsheet.
It is. Hey, so it's canon bonus round time. No fanfare.
No, unfortunately, he is not a saint. If any of the antipopes were going to be a saint aside from Hippolytus, I thought it might be him, because he's very well received. And I think there is a Saint Dioscorus. Yeah, there is a Dioscorus saint, but that one is the one who was excommunicated by the church. He's just a saint in the Eastern Church, so yeah. No, no good. So his total score is a 24.0625, which makes him second place for this whole section on antipopes. He's only behind Eulalius. And Eulalius had a lot of, oh yeah, we gave him a full score for his face. Cause he had that wonderful picture of him like with the fire.
Yes.
Yeah, so he got a full score for that one, and that's the only reason that he's beating in this category. So now I have to ask you an important question. As far as this goes, do you think he is a pope or nope?
I'm gonna have to give him a nope.
Really? He's the actual Pope!
Yeah, but he just didn't have time to do anything.
He didn't have the time to do anything, but if he had lived long enough, if he had lived even a couple more days, if anybody decided, if he died and they went, we're going back to election rather than reconciling with Boniface, he'd be getting a Pope episode instead of an anti-Pope episode. Like 60 out of 70 bishops said Pope to this man and said nope to Boniface. To me, it has to be a Pope. And if we can go to, we have not gone to dice.
We haven't for diced. An anti-Pope yet. All right, let's dice.
Let's divine intervention this bitch, because I think it has to be. So, what does the divine dice say?
Let me find my dice. There's so much dice. So many dice. You have a
lot of dice.
I know, I do. It's a mistake.
I have literally one set of dice. And they are boring.
Alright, I've got a d20 here.
Roll it.
16.
Yes! He gets it. He is a Pope!
This was my first set of dice. Somehow I pulled out the d20 from my first set of dice.
Ooh, perfect. Well, you know, he's feeling real good about it. Oh, gee. You know, and that makes sense that he would get it by divine intervention. Because I think it's gotta be. So, congratulations, Dioscorus. We're continuing to rehabilitate your memory as a anti-pope who is not really an anti-pope. And maybe, as the Annuario Pontifico recommended, one day your legitimacy will be sustained. So yeah, that's it. That is Dioscorus. And on that note, just kind of putting it out there now, this is our last anti-pope for the year.
Ooh.
We will not be coming up against another one in the popes that we are covering up till December. So, that means that we are going to have Patreon bonus episodes for October, November, and December for the topics that you want to hear about. Someone suggested that we do some papal media, so we are definitely going to be starting the young pope. And when we do that, what we'll probably do is release a couple episodes, like shorter episodes, but we'll do 2 in a month or something like that, so we can watch a couple episodes, talk about it. They'll be shorter. We won't blether on for an hour about 2 episodes or something. So that way you'll get it all a lot quicker and you won't be like, oh, they only watched 3 episodes this month and now I have to wait till next month to hear how that's going. So
yeah,
that's coming. And then of course, when it comes out, we'll be doing that 2 Popes movie. But that won't be until December, so you may get that in January, depending on how our schedule plays out. But it's coming, for sure. So, if you have a topic you want us to cover, let us know. If you have an opinion vis-a-vis Poperinos versus Peperoncinis, you know, let us know. If you're coming to Sound Education, which we are going to be speaking at, let us know. Because then we'll come up and see you and love you forever. So, yeah. On that note, we could say thank you and goodbye.
Bye.
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 Au revoir for the sexy oranges.
No.